The Fan.
Detroit doofus factor in the overhead compartment on the trip to London. Leader Fan, Fan Radio Network.
The stories a stadium could tell.
And KFAN.com. 1 minute, no, 2 minutes, 1 second past the hour of 3 o'clock Central Daylight Time. Welcome back. It is a Monday edition of the Bumper to Bumper Show on a beautiful fall afternoon here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am the host of the program. My name is Dan Barrero. I am a former Inkstained Wretch newspaper of the Twin Cities. Garzy is the producer of the show and two-time state high school tennis champion. We are delighted that you chose to join us today. I can only imagine what the first hour, perhaps all 3.5 hours of this show would have been like if the doofus factor had not prevailed and the Detroit Lions had left Minnesota with a victory. Man, the vitriol from start to finish would have been legendary, perhaps even historic. So what will we have instead? A quiet, modest, responsible celebration of a game the Vikings stole from the opposition yesterday? Or will we crow, guess what? What is wrong with winning? We now sit at 2-1. It's a far cry from 1-2 as we head, I guess it would be east, right? Towards London. That would be going east, if I have my geography right.
Yeah, that's probably the route they're taking.
Across the pond.
You could go west. It might take longer.
It would take a lot longer, I would say, and probably cost a lot more money. And we're delighted you chose to join us today, no matter what you might be thinking of the the Vikings victory. What was the final score? 28-24? No. I don't even have the score right.
It was 27-24.
No, it wouldn't have been that because then the Lions would have set up for a field goal.
We were down by 3. We ended up
winning
by 4.
Yeah, so 28-24 was indeed the final. I think I was right the first time around. And I expect emails today. I expect the Brad Sean Bryan inbox to be flooded with emails today. Booth@KFAN.com. I expect an endless array of talkback opportunities that people might take. Because I am very curious to know how you are processing and digesting the victory. Do you say to yourself, there's 17 regular season games, you enjoy the hell out of every one of the victories, no matter how you indeed get them, and you don't apologize for any of them. In fact, you celebrate the team's ability to twice come from behind down double digits, 14-0 early, then down 10 later, get the job done, and then at the end of regulation, to the new coach's credit, to the Vikings' credit, to Kirk Cousins' credit, they didn't play to tie it and send it into overtime. They did go after the victory. That's a positive. No question about that. That is the aggressive nature that I think we're all looking for, and they were rewarded for that aggressive nature, getting the victory. And it, of course, wasn't our number one receiver, at least on the depth chart. It wasn't our number two receiver. It was improbably, or perhaps logically, KJ Osborne, who indeed delivers, burning an ex-Viking defensive back. Is that correct?
Mike Hughes. Yeah. We saw it from Mike Hughes a couple of different issues yesterday. Yeah.
We have a number of outstanding Vikings talking points to get to today. The Bort and Volvo guest lineup will include a visit, we think, around 3:30-ish with cornerback Patrick Peterson. He is scheduled to be with us about a half hour from now. That could change. You know how it is with players and coaches, quite frankly. And we expect a Is it 4:55 visit with Ben Lieber?
Yes.
4:55 with Nacho. When do they go across the pond? When are they leaving to go across the pond? Is it tonight or tomorrow?
No, they're going late.
Oh, they're doing the late trip.
We're going Thursday, I think.
Interesting.
I think the team is going Thursday. And you know why, Dan, because they have looked at all the analytics and all the science.
Hell yes.
Heard Adam Thielen on the morning show talking about it today a little bit. What they tell him to do.
I actually might accept that even on the basis of the eye test or the body test. I think it might make more sense than to turning it into a Wagnerian opera.
I think the Saints are going today or tomorrow.
Well, that's the Saints for you.
Yeah.
Saints probably need the extra time. They're a mess right now.
I know.
They're a mess. They've got injury issues. They're not playing very well. Their quarterback's a mess. He's
Jameis
hurt.
Is still their quarterback.
That's exactly it. So we have every opportunity, it appears, to get to improbably 3-1 when it could well be we were going over there to get back to 500 at 2-2. I will tell you, quite frankly, that I know all. Look, I grew up around the Detroit Lions because I am an NFC. Well, then it was Central, now North snob. So I grew up around Bears-Lions games, Bears-Vikings games. I'm very familiar with the history of the Detroit Lions. I'm very familiar with the cliche that has been uttered a million times today. Well, that's the Lions for you. What'd you think was going to happen? Pay attention to their history? You can't possibly be surprised by what took place. I'm aware of all of that, but I will tell you, as I'm watching the game from the Barca, I'm still gobsmacked that the Vikings won the game. With all we know about the Lions and the Lions' history, I am still astounded that, A, the Vikings had a chance to come back in that game, and that indeed they did. And I don't think one could possibly overstate the Detroit doofus factor yesterday. And it's not just the decision late. There are a couple of other decisions that I don't think are getting as much attention as they should, and we will be talking about those in Vikings Talking Points.
Talking Points brought to you by Red Savoy Pizza?
Even better. And I like I said, despite the history of the Lions, I'm saying, well, I don't know how to break it to anybody, but the Detroit Lions look like the better team. Through much of that game, they just flat out look like the better football team. Our defense was a mess, I thought. Same sort of issues through at least the first half, where it appeared the middle of the field was wide open. I heard Ben Lieber talk about this on his post-game analysis that he does, I think, via Vikings.com. It may even be on our website as well. And that was his one concern, and it's one of the subjects we'll get into with him because he's a defensive purist. And eventually, there were some key stops, obviously. There was a key pass breakup by Kendricks on a 4th-and-1. They got the ball, delivered the ball back to the Vikings, and then they scored off of that reversal and that great field position. There was another 4th-and-1 that, in fact, Peterson was involved on a run play to the right where his job, it looked to me, and we'll talk to him about it, I hope, at 3:30, was to contain outside, to make sure that the running back could not kind of take the ball outside. He kept it in where two other defenders were there. That gets stopped up. We didn't score on that change of possession, but what it obviously did do was it prevented them from perhaps moving on to get another score, and one more score for the Lions would have obviously been rather detrimental for the Vikings. But teams are still moving the ball too easily. They're running most of the time at will, averaging about 5 yards a carry. There's a part of me that says that was a mistake the Lions made. There were a couple times where they should have run even more often than they did. I'm not going to lie to you, I have concerns about the defense in general. I quite frankly have concerns about the defensive philosophy. I'm not sure Troy Aikman was wrong, even though Ed Donatell dismissed his concerns after week number one. So all those things, and the fact is the offense looked crappy for two of the four quarters. Looked uncertain. The quarterback did. The pressure was once again getting to him. We got good I think, I'm hoping, I didn't include this in the talking points, and I probably should have, but I'm hoping that at the very least, beyond getting the victory itself, because let's face it, and you can write this down, 2-1 looks a hell of a lot better than 1-2 yes, after 3 weeks. Yep. It's astounding how different that looks and how different the tone would be today, especially having to make the long trip. I think we should be able to put to rest, if nothing else, the notion that Dalvin Cook is done. There were people out there, you were even hinting at it, wondering that it might be over for Dalvin, or all those carries, all that mileage on the body. Now, bad fumble, but that's not, I don't think, a condition of being done. It's just, it's a fumble. It's a bad play.
I don't think he came back after it.
He didn't. No, he didn't, but the point is when he was in and they gave him the ball, he was effective.
Yeah, he was good
yesterday. He was very effective. So I think, I'm hoping this should, at the very least, put to rest the notion that he's done as in he's lost a step. I saw nothing in his performance. I thought he had the usual extra verve that goes into some of his runs. I saw him smiling on a couple of runs. It looked to me like he was enjoying the hell out of himself because for the first time, he was given a chance to work up a bit of a lather. Now, we all know what the problem is with Dalvin. Can he stay on the field? And again, he's hurt. You just may have heard from the head coach, Kevin O'Connell, very disappointed in the start time for the presser. It almost seems like they were out to sabotage us today. 2:45 start
well,
for the presser?
Well, everybody, Common, because he had to tap dance. It was supposed to be 2:30.
Oh, I didn't know that. Is that right?
Yes, it was supposed to be 2:30. Common had to tap dance, which, as you know, if he's not planning for it.
No, dangerous.
Not a great audibler.
Then he decides to just let it go.
Yes.
And gets in trouble. Then he decides to come back in and abruptly cut it off mid-sentence.
It was a tough couple of minutes.
So
I think they sabotaged two of our shows.
That's true.
Our lead-in.
And us.
And us.
Dalvin, I believe, is sort of listed as, it's a shoulder issue, right?
Yes, the one that he typically deals with.
I actually was worried that it was his head at first, because he got mangled after the fumble in a way that, I thought, man, did he get knocked out? But it wasn't the head, right? It was the shoulder.
Right.
In this case. He is now listed as, I think, day-to-day, for whatever that's worth. So will he be available on Sunday? Have no clue. But it doesn't sound like it's as serious as it otherwise might have been. So I'll get to a couple emails. Hit the talkback line if you would like. Talking points brought to you by Red's Savoy Pizza. And we got a number of really good ones today. But I'm not going to lie to you. There will be a doofus factor sub theme to today's program. I am still stunned, even though it's the Lions. I am still stunned that the Vikings got a way to get that thing done. And maybe Patrick Peterson can explain it to us exactly what took place. I'm wondering if he is as surprised. Players probably aren't allowed to say they're surprised because they're wired to say you never quit.
Right.
You never give up.
Yep.
You keep fighting. You
yep.
keep pushing.
That's why you play.
And the Vikings did keep pushing. There's not any question about that. But it was, I thought, another mind-blowing ball game that left me still with a number of questions. Put it this way, I hope and I think the Vikings get this. You can't count on winning too many games like that because not every team has the Detroit untouched. Forget what took place on Saturday in East Lansing, Michigan, even though it's Monday, or just because it's Monday. Monday is generally Vikings Day here on the Bumper to Bumper show. Almost no matter what the Gophers have been up to the previous Saturday, good or bad. And part of that for me is I generally am on Sunday sermons. I got a full hour in on the Gophers' authoritative victory over the, well, really, that's not even the right word, destruction of the Michigan State Spartans. The head coach had told reporters he was so frustrated by the previous loss that I think he'd stayed in the office for like three straight nights. And, of course, all the snarky Michigan State fans are going, well, how long is he going to stay this week, like for the next 8 days before the next game? You were there for every minute of it. I asked for some kind of resolution after the first three games. because of how bad those teams were. I needed a little more evidence that even though the Gophers destroyed each of those teams, that they didn't just destroy them because those teams, I still think are winless, although I actually don't know what they did over the weekend.
I think New Mexico State beat Hawaii, I think.
Jerry Kill broke through?
I think. Don't quote me. I didn't. Okay. They were winning when I checked.
All right.
On the way home on Saturday.
Fair enough. And they answered. I mean, that was, I'm trying to think. I don't know how many, in the time I've been here since 86, I don't know how many times against any Big Ten team, but even one that, look, may end up being overrated this year, that they were ranked as high at 11 at one point. A team coming off the kind of season they had a year ago, decent pedigree for sure. A game that they, unlike the Vikings game, which I think left you with as many questions as answers about the Purple, there were no questions that the Gophers didn't answer. They played, the way I put it yesterday is, I felt like they played like a serious team with serious intentions. And I probably spent too much time on the offense and not enough on the defense, because the defense was tremendous again. They allowed almost nothing. They got, obviously, key takeaways when at the only minute where it looked like Michigan State might indeed be interested in getting back in this thing. And by the way, after they got that, forced that fumble, what did the offense do? They went 90 yards for another touchdown. They immediately took advantage of it. And more than anything else offensively, what impressed me was they came out absolutely willing to probe a soft and beaten Michigan State secondary early and often. They did not just say, well, if we can run, we don't have to do that. And there was a quote from one of the Michigan State stalwart defenders basically saying, well, we thought they were going to run a lot.
Right.
And I said, this should be music to, this should be the kind of confirmation that PJ Fleck should relish, to say, yes, this is a change, giving up maybe a little of that authority, deferring to an experienced offensive coordinator that we brought back, not being afraid. There was no fear. And they weren't stupid. They weren't reckless. But there was no fear in anything they did. And it was, if it was a fight, they'd have stopped it. They'd have stopped it in the set. Well, okay, maybe the start of the third quarter after that 90-yard drive, because technically in terms of points, it still wasn't that many points. I couldn't be more impressed with what I saw. And I don't know what, maybe you have a better idea, that we're going to look back and Michigan State's going to end up with one of the worst records in the Big Ten. I don't know. Doesn't matter at this point. It's a Big Ten team on the road. So how often have we done that anywhere? Maybe we've done that to like horrible bottom feeding programs in the Big Ten every once in a while, but that's not what Michigan State is viewed as being, even if they're not as good or will not be as good as they were a year ago.
70,000 people there. They haven't won there since 2006. The more you brought up the way that Michigan State planned to defend them, the more I read about Michigan State's intentions, and the more I read about how Minnesota was being talked about, this is like Thursday and Friday. And then we had time on Saturday in the press box. Grimm and I were doing some reading, and we were reading some of the things. And we said, I know that they're not exactly the Rams of the late 90s, but they have thrown the ball a little bit this year, and they have thrown the ball historically with this coordinator. And Grimm and I were said, if this is what they're thinking, and then we heard that they're planning on playing a couple of their 300-pound defensive linemen because they want to stop the run. And we said, man, Tanner might have one of those Purdue games, the 20 of 22, 2019, that kind of broke, that sprung board that season.
Yes.
And that's pretty much exactly what happened. He was 23 of 26. He hit 10 different receivers. He was just named today Big Ten Co-Offensive Player of the Week. I like how you phrased it. It was a mature effort.
It really was.
And that's what happens when you've got mature guys. And they do. They've got a quarterback who's married. They've got a running back who's 24. They've got receivers who have played a long time. They've got people that maybe if they haven't played here, they've played elsewhere because of the portal. It's a mature, serious group. And that was the way that they went about it.
Well, by the way,
immediately
even,
too.
Even with his legs, Morgan, did he have three or four first down scrambling?
Three.
Three really good, smart runs that were crafty. You know, again, no one's going to, like with Kirk, no one's going to, you know, mistake him for Fran. Tarkington. Fran Tarkington. I was on Sauce's side on that one. But they were all resourceful. They were all, I don't know if you could call any run crucial in this game because it was such a one-sided affair where
but they're deflating.
Oh, God.
You can just tell how deflated they were.
You could see it. You could hear it. You were there. I can watch it on TV and the level of frustration because I think they assumed they got the pedigree of what happened a year ago, and they're going, we just kind of laid a semi-egg on the road. We're back home. They're going to be on it. They're going to be on top of, you know, making a statement, Michigan State was, and they never, from the opening bell, were given the chance to do it. So that's what I was asking for, and they delivered it, like I said, so emphatically that it goes beyond even mattering whether Michigan State is any good or not. Now, we all know the way this schedule is always built, in the end, it's probably going to come down to those last couple games, or, well, maybe not both, maybe not, maybe Iowa will be eliminated by then. Iowa, congratulations to Iowa. They did it again.
Yeah, I know.
Their defense outscored their offense.
Two touchdowns.
Against Rutgers, yeah. And that's their formula. If they can get, if Iowa can get two defensive touchdowns every game, they might have a chance.
Which they might.
And they might.
I mean, because how many games do you need before you just go, yeah, this is what they're going to do?
It's uncanny.
And the fumble, I saw the fumble. I saw the interception on the highlights. I was watching the fumble live on the bus.
Yes.
You just can't make it up. The guy has a nice run, drops it. There's three Iowa guys there and no one else. And they run it in for a touchdown.
One last thing. I don't want to get too far behind because we expect Patrick Peterson after the break. But there's always the question of how coaches handle success. So is PJ in the, I'm downplaying it, I'm soft selling it, it's we're doing what we're supposed to do, proud of the club, no big deal, or is he aroused by it, do you think?
Well, I think he's pleased with how they're playing because he has said for a long time he likes this group because of what we talked about, because of their mentality, because of how they go about it. But you know PJ,
yeah.
Tomorrow will be, we need to go 1-0
right.
In the Purdue championship season. We need to be better today than we were yesterday. But he's also done that with a lot of these guys now for 3, 4, 5 years, including the quarterback in that 2019 season. So I would expect he handles it exactly like that.
By the way, is Purdue going to have its quarterback back?
I don't know.
They barely won last week. Who did they play?
Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, they did win.
Yep.
And then, I don't know.
Like maybe, a rib deal.
Maybe I'm underselling the Illini.
Illini
defense might be one of the best defenses in the history of the Big Ten, apparently.
Yes. I mean, they're hanging in.
And that's there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
After the bye week. Bielema is a good coach. I'm a Bielema guy, as you know, in terms of coaching. He's a good coach. But yeah, it's setting up well for him.
It is setting up very well, and they absolutely impressed on Saturday. Let's get a pause in. We may get a phone call from Vikings cornerback Patrick Peterson. He is a 2022 bumper-to-bumper regular during the football season. Let's get his reaction to the dramatic come-from-behind victory of your Minnesota Vikings over the, yes, hapless Detroit Lions, who, for the record, have now lost 11 consecutive.
On the Fan.
While we wait for a phone call from Patrick Peterson, what else happened in the NFC North? Well, improbably, the Chicago Bears are also 2-1. They still can't throw the ball, but they didn't need to yesterday against the Houston Texans. They rushed for almost 300 yards. You want to talk about a throwback team? And they're not doing it just because they can. They're doing it because they can't do anything else. QB is struggling, man. He is struggling mightily. Nevertheless, it might be one of the more misleading 2-1 records in the early season history of the National Football League, of any National Football League season. And the Green Bay Packers held on in a steamy Tampa Bay. The difference, a failed 2-point conversion. Brady brought him back and probably got the touchdown to cut the Green Bay lead to 14-12. Then imagine if any other quarterback does this. He gives up 5 yards on a delay of game penalty. Does not get the playoff in time. They had what looked to be a very effective run call. Everybody spread out. And that play was nullified by the delay. And then it was an incomplete pass. So Green Bay also sits at 2-1 as well. So very bunched up NFC North. Patrick Peterson, kind enough to join us as he does every week. He's on the Kinetico Water Systems Hotline. Welcome back to the program. Are you allowed as a veteran player to pay much attention to what else is happening in the NFC North? I was just talking about some of the other results yesterday.
I mean, Dan, honestly, it's way too early to start paying attention to, you know, any, you know, what's going on right now. We all know, you know, nothing's won in the first quarter of the season. You know, typically the season starts around, you know, November, December. That's when teams, you know, typically start separating themselves. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want to continue just playing, finding a way to tally up as many wins as we can early on so we can carry that momentum late into the year.
And you got it last night or yesterday. I'm still not sure how you did it. How did you do it? I look at some aspects of that game, and I'll admit, I thought you were done. I did not think that we were going to see a comeback. How did you guys win that game?
Just guys not blinking, not flinching, you know, just sticking to the strip, you know, taking it a play at a time. You know, we understood that, you know, a lot of things were self-inflicted wounds, put us in some bad situations, but we were able to overcome those, you know. So for the most part, just guys just sticking to the strip, you know, believing in the guys next to them. And believing that we can get the job done, you know, until the game is over.
And you did. I'm curious, as a defensive player, what it is like to be out there when you have a coach who, through most of the game, no matter what, how many yards to go there were on fourth down, almost refused to punt. It's pretty unusual. Yeah. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was quite, you know, gutsy on those guys in, but, you know, I guess, you know, Dan is trying to build a culture around there that they want to be, you know, the big bad boys, and trying to find ways to, you know, close out games when they have the opportunity to, you know. But the opportunity didn't present us. The opportunity presented itself, but, you know, we was able to, you know, shut the fire out. And I'm just proud of the way the guys, you know, had a week of preparation and, you know, really taking that last game of adversity. And, you know, staring it in the eye and really diffusing the momentum throughout that game, you know, because we had to battle, you know, throughout that game, you know, we had to come from behind, you know, throughout that whole game.
A couple times, absolutely right. We're on the 4th-and-4 decision late to go for the field goal. Were you surprised, given that up till then, like you say, he's been saying, we're just gonna keep going for it? What did you think of that move? Did it surprise you?
Say it one more time, Dan. I'm sorry, I lost you.
The field goal, the decision the Lions made to kick the long field goal at the end on the 4th-and-4, given they had obviously gone for it as many times as they had on fourth down, almost no matter how many yards to go, did it surprise you that that's what they went with?
No, I figured that they would try to go with the field goal at that point just because, you know, it would give them a little bit more leeway for forcing us to go for a touchdown versus 3 going into overtime. You know, so, but, you know, I think with the block, what happened last week, and, you know, the pressure that we was getting on those guys, kind of put a little bit of a fear in his heart. So I don't even know which way he pushed it or how he missed it. I just heard the crowd go crazy, and I just knew that the kick wasn't good.
What did you think? Did you feel pretty good about your chances then at that point to take the ball and do something with it?
Yeah, because at that time I felt like we really took over the momentum. Mm-hmm. I really felt like the offense, you know, really started to find a groove. The running game late in the game really started to, you know, wear down on those guys and open up, you know, KJ, Adam. You know, we all know JJ had a quiet game, but when you're that good and attract, you know, that many eyes, it opens it up for other players, and those guys just relished that moment, and it came through for us.
You know, you mentioned JJ. He had, of course, a ridiculous opener, and he's been quieter the last two. Very clearly, teams are doing what tends to happen with great receivers, is that they're going to bring extra attention and say, we're going to make somebody else beat you. So he's still pretty young. You know, he's had unprecedented success early in his career, but he's still pretty young. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to get it from a veteran's perspective, especially defensive back's perspective, what advice you would give him in that area. Because I would assume it's easy to get a little frustrated if you're used to having the success he's had. What's the key, do you think, for him to sort of keep his equilibrium here as teams clearly are loading up to try to make life difficult for him? What's he have to do?
Man, we all know that JJ is a team player, and he understands that, you know, he's going to get majority of the attention from, you know, defenses that we face, you know, on a weekly basis. So, you know, he's such a great team guy to where if we're winning and the team is going in the right direction and everything's working out, I'm sure that he's happy with the success as well. But, you know, at the same time, we all know what we fight for individually. And, you know, when you're attracting that much, you know, attention, you know, and we're trying to go, you know, go to a certain destination, you know, at the same time, you have to be able to willing to fall into that, you know, that role per se, and just understand your games are going to come.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's going to be quiet all year. He just has to continue sticking to the script, continue to attract, you know, the attention that he is getting, and that open up the offense to where now team's going to be like, now we can't double guard him. We can't
yeah.
double him now because KJ's getting off, or Adam's getting off, or Swerve is getting off. You know, so it's just all, the plan is all going to work together. And I can't wait to see it all flourish.
Patrick Peterson with us via the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline the day after the Vikings come from behind victory over the Lions. Team heading, of course, to London next. More on that in a minute. You had, there was an interesting, speaking of play calls, they had a 3rd and 1, and they end up throwing in your direction. You make a really nice defensive play down the right sidelines. And it ended up being a sneaky, important play because it ends the drive. And I think, in fact, after the punt, you guys then, that one of the your offense took the ball down the field and scored. I guess describe what you remember happening on that play, because I thought it was one of those situations where it was made for a run. They were running pretty well. They try to go for a bigger play, and you're there. Tell me what you saw on that play.
Yeah, we actually know on the scouting report that those guys tend to be a little bit more, you know, aggressive in the 3rd and 1 and the 4th and 1. If you go back, even on a couple of the 4th and 1,
yep.
4th and 2s, those guys were passing the ball more often than running. So they have a well-balanced attack. So I really wasn't surprised, you know, that they end up throwing the ball, you know, at that point. I'm just, just happy that, you know, I dissected the problem and the speed out from a press look. Quarterback would never do that. So once I saw him go on the out breaking route, I kind of started working my way to the upfield shoulder. And I knew I was in position, so the quarterback was going to probably try to fit it in back shoulder. So that's why I didn't get my eyes back, because if I would have got my eyes back earlier, he probably would have completed that pass. So at that point, I had to play through the receiver's hands. And, you know, like you said, it was a very, you know, sneaky, important play in that game to help us end up coming out on top.
Yeah, that's a good detailed description of it. There was a 4th and 1 where they did run the ball, and you were involved in the contain that made sure the running back couldn't get outside. You kind of forced it back inside for a couple of your teammates. Do you remember that play? Because that also turned the ball over, obviously, to your team.
Oh, yeah, Dan. I have a very, very great memory when it comes to football plays. But, yeah, on that play, 4th and 1, at the time, I believe it was about 2 minutes, right before 2 minute warning. I believe, because we end up having to punt the ball back off.
That's true.
If I'm not mistaken,
that might have even been. I don't know if it was. Yeah, you either punted it or was that? Yeah, you didn't do anything with that drive, but still, it was important to get it out of their hands.
No doubt about it. So on that play, I knew it was kind of coming our way, me and Daniil's way. And if you go back and watch the play, I was telling Daniil, make sure he crashed down, because initially he has the outside gap. So I'm telling him to crash down because I didn't want the right tackle to have a free release on a little guy like me and giving those guys a great opportunity of converting that first down. So I told him, Smack, make sure you crash down into that C gap, which it gave a better indicating or a reading for me to come down and make sure I crack the place. And Cam actually did a great job of tripping him up early on in that play because he shot his gap, which was the B gap, if I'm not mistaken. He ended up shooting that gap, tripped him up a little bit, running back stops his feet, and makes my job, me and Daniil's job, that much easier to make a key conversion stop.
In you know, the defense is it's still interesting because you've had a a decent part of the Eagles game, and at least the first half, and then a decent part, you could say, of the first half of this game where it looked like they're moving the ball too easily. They got big yardage totals. Now, again, you could say, well, in the second half of the Eagles game, you guys didn't really give up that much. You didn't give up as much in the second half against the Lions either. But is there still some concern about the stretches where it looks like the other team is moving the ball a little too easily? Is there still some things that, that concern you about this defense at this point?
You know, not at all, Dan. You know, the name of, you know, of defense is defending the goal line.
Yep.
I think we do a great job of, you know, not letting teams, you know, blow up the scoreboard. You know, all the games that team have scored, you know, they haven't scored no more than 24 points. So we're right where we need to be. We're probably 7 points off our mark, which is, you know, 17. We want to, you know, average on the year, but I believe we're right where we are. You got to understand as well, Dan, this is all of our first year, you know, in this system, you know, so we're still all figuring things out, you know, on the run, and it's working out pretty well for us. I believe we're going in the right direction. I think guys are really, really grasping the scheme. Coach Donatello's getting a better understanding of his skill set now that we're actually out there live, live bullets. Now we can see tape, yeah. Coach up on some things, and just move forward. You know, I believe the sky's the limit for it because we have the recipe, you know, to have a great defense. You know, we just have to continue to clean up the little mistakes, you know, here and there. And teams are going to move the ball. You know, it's not like, you know, they're practicing as well, you know, preparing for us. So they are going to move the ball time and time throughout games. But long as we third down, it was like 3 for 16 at one point.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Getting down in the red zone, making those guys go for it because now we put the fear in their heart of not kicking field goals. You know, just things like that. It's all coming together just fine. We just have to make sure we just stick to the process.
They were better on fourth down than third down, although to your point, they'd scored right in the 30s both of their first two games, and after the good start right by them, you obviously held them well under that. Are you have you played any pro games in London? Are you a fan of these overseas games? You know why the league does them, but what's your own thought about playing across the pond?
The games are cool. You know, it's an awesome experience to have an opportunity to play on a different continent and be able to excite fans. European fans that really don't have an understanding, but they love football, so that cool. The rest, you know, we have to make sure that, you know, we get the proper rest and the proper sleep to make sure that we'll energize and ready to go for Sunday.
Last item for you. You have been doing, I meant to talk to you about this last week, but you've got a podcast called All Things Covered, you and Bryant McFadden, which I believe you update even during the season as well. Has this been fun for you? What's this been like to do? What are you trying to get? What's the objective of this particular podcast?
Man, you know, All Things Covered is just something me and Bryant started, just something fun and cool we wanted to do throughout the pandemic because we knew and know so many, you know, great people. And, you know, I know the world at that time, you know, the world just wanted, you know, something to hear, something to talk about. And I end up taking off and I end up enjoying it. And, you know, now that we're 3 years in, you know, I'm looking at, you know, career out the football, you know, just how much I enjoy it, you know, how much, you know, I was, you know, how much I will be able to be involved in the game, be around the game, be able to talk to greats that's still playing, you know, so.
Yep.
You know, I could see it being something, you know, good for me after football. You know, it won't hurt to see this handsome, pretty smile on TV every once in a while. So, you know, why waste that opportunity, Dan?
No, you should take advantage of it. And as you say, the beauty of it is you've got all kinds of connections. So you're going to get, right. It's going to be easier for you to book big names and players that are, you know, allow you to talk about all sorts of stuff, including this week, Buckley talking about Brady, Deion Sanders, and others, correct?
Yeah, man. We have some awesome guests that have some great stories that they always share. We're going to have an enemy this week. Darius Slay is a good friend of mine.
Ah.
They beat up on us pretty well in week two, but he's a good friend of mine. We're going to have some fun tomorrow night. We typically film on Tuesdays, and the show is put out on Thursdays, if I'm not mistaken. So be on the lookout of the Darius Slay conversation coming to you soon.
We'll do that. Safe travels across the pond. I think you're not going till Thursday. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're not leaving till Thursday around 5.
Gotcha.
I believe.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think the Saints are going either today or tomorrow. And there's an ongoing debate, I guess, over are you better off spending the whole week there to get acclimated, or is it better to just not turn it into a whole week of getting yourself used to it? You fine with this direction, just getting there late?
Well, you know what, Dan? I did the time where we went the entire week. It didn't work out for us very well.
Mm.
We got stomped by the Rams. So this will be my second time going, and we're going the later trip. So I'll more
back. See how exactly. Thanks again for the time. We will chat. We'll hopefully chat next week. Might be a little funky given the schedule, but we'll try to work through that on your way back from London. Thanks again.
No worries, and then I cannot get off this call without saying congratulations on making it to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate it. That's kind of you to say. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. You take care.
You too. Patrick Peterson on the Connecticut Water Systems Hotline. Vikings cornerback who did have a couple of nice plays yesterday, including that sneaky important one on that 3rd and 1 that looked as if it was the time to run the ball, but the Lions are the Lions, and there is a doofus factor that we must discuss as really part of our program the rest of the way. Ben Lieber is scheduled to join at 4:55. We got more Vikings talking points brought to you by Red Savoy.